I am Divya Shekhar and this is From the Bookshelves of Forbes India. Ever heard of the saying, New Year, New Beginnings? Well, I believe that every new year is flush with possibilities, giving us yet another opportunity to make our lives more peaceful, meaningful, reassess our goals and do whatever makes us happy. So I thought, why not start 2024 by speaking to an author who has spent his entire life writing about how we can live our best lives, be it excelling at work, creating wealth, nurturing meaningful relationships, or finding happiness. He has also been a leadership coach for billionaires and financial heavyweights around the world, and his books like The Monk Who Sold His Ferrari and The 5 AM Club have all been international bestsellers. So for the first episode of From the Bookshelves in 2024, here's a conversation with writer and leadership coach Robin Sharma. We talk about whether wealth creation is central to happiness, qualities that have helped billionaires succeed, also traits that have dragged down the biggest of leaders, and how to separate good advice from all the noise that might come your way this new year. So I want to start by talking to you about your new book that is set to release in a few months. It's called The Wealth Money Can't Buy. Can you give us a glimpse into what that is?
Sure. Well, society has told us that wealth is all about how much money you have in your portfolio, let's say, or your personal net worth. And I believe that while money is important, and often it's a scoreboard for success in business, there are other forms of wealth, including a great family life, including making a difference to your community, including taking care of your health. So The Wealth Money Can't Buy is really a book that deconstructs this model I've been teaching to my clients for the past 15 years called the 8 forms of wealth. And I believe that when we start living each of those 8 forms of wealth, we not only become truly successful in the world, but live much happier lives.
So I have read a bit about the 8 forms of wealth in your previous book, The Everyday Hero Manifesto. So while community service, spending time with your family, seeking mentors, etc., are also important and are considered to be a sign of a wealthy individual, could money or the desire to make more wealth be sidelined that easily?
Well, Divya, I know your readers and listeners at Forbes understand that money is important. And I'm not in any way saying that it's not. So the idea in my mind is not about sidelining wealth. It's about not making financial wealth your only focus. Because I've, for the past 20 years plus, I've mentored billionaires, CEOs, very famous and successful people. And a lot of them are cash rich and happiness poor. So all I'm saying is not sideline the pursuit of financial success, but add personal growth in there, add a great family life in there, add impact on their community in there, add a sense of adventure in there. And I'd actually say that when you work on the other 7 forms of wealth, and I really appreciate you being so well prepared, knowing about the 8 forms of wealth, but when you work on those other 7 forms of wealth, the paradox is you actually make more money. For example, one of the other forms of wealth is personal growth. When you develop your mindset, when you release, let's say, past trauma, when you work on what I call your health set, your fitness, that'll give you more energy, more stamina, more brain power. All that personal growth and self-mastery actually makes you much better in business, which gives you more money.
Right. Do you see a lot of business leaders and billionaires being more receptive or more open to that? I think because in the wake of the COVID-19 pandemic, we had this huge awareness wherein we said that, you know, it's not only about chasing money, but there are a lot of other things that are important too in life. And we had those conversations in the business community as well. So do you see more awareness or more receptiveness towards this idea among the billionaires and, you know, the wealth creators?
Absolutely. I believe the whole world has changed since the pandemic. People's values have changed dramatically. Many people are waking up to the idea they might have climbed the mountain of success or they may be in the process of climbing the mountain of success, according to the definitions society has told them. And yet they're disconnected from their family. They're disconnected from their spirits. Their health is suffering. They're not having any fun. And so, yes, I think it's not only the billionaires and the CEOs and the elite performers who are waking up to the idea that money isn't everything. I think most people in the world are realizing that these things are very important. And I think that speaks to another key point, which is society in many ways has taught us to measure success by money, fame, and applause. And we all know those things don't lead to any lasting happiness or any lasting fulfillment. So The Wealth Money Can't Buy is a book that shows a completely other way to define not only wealth, but success.
Right. What does it take, you know, for you as an author to sort of stay differentiated in this age when there is so much indifference due to familiarity? Like, what I mean is, when you wrote The Monk Who Sold His Ferrari in the 90s, it was a time when, you know, no one had heard, no one had read something quite like that, and it became one of the all-time bestsellers, and people still read it, people still cite it. Nowadays, in the age of social media, there are 1,001 pages dedicated to, you know, motivational quotes, reels, videos. How do you do that? How do you be your best self? How do you achieve this, etc.? You yourself are quoted in so many of them. Your quotes appear there. There are reels made out of it. So when a book comes out on similar lines, you know, you tend to feel like, okay, you've heard this before. So how do you deal with that?
Well, it's a fascinating and very good question. You're right. Instagram, for example, it's all motivational, inspirational quotes. And we do live in a world where so many people are life coaches. What I would say is there's a lot of good information out there. I've been at this 30 years. And when you do one thing in your professional career for 30 years, it does give you layers of insight. Mm-hmm. It does give you a lot of experience. And I think people feel experience. Mm-hmm. So that's one way that I differentiate. The second thing is I'm always pushing my craft. Mm-hmm. So the Everyday Hero Manifesto took me 2 years to write. This new book, The Wealth Money Can't Buy, it's mm-hmm. consumed me for this whole year. Mm-hmm. And it does have a lot of different IP. For example, right. Even that model, the eight forms of wealth, mm-hmm. that's IP that I've developed over these past many years. In mm-hmm. the Everyday Hero Manifesto, as you know, since you've read it, I mean, that was one model after another model on productivity, mindset, leadership, et cetera. So I try to differentiate myself by just providing honest creativity and innovation in my work and not trying to offer platitudes like set mm-hmm. goals, be happy, and mm-hmm. those kinds of things. And I also try to marry philosophy with science. And if you look at the leadership and personal development field right now, it's very interesting because science is catching up with a lot of what philosophers have said for many, many years. So I try to make sure I do that. And the final thing is my work, I try to make it inspirational, but also very tactical and practical.
Right. And so in this day and age, when there is a deluge of so much information that people are being flooded with, how does one recognize good advice from all the noise that's out there?
Sure. Well, I think you have to read a lot to get the experience to be able to decipher what's mm-hmm. valuable to you. So I'm just a big fan of any leader consuming a lot of information mm-hmm. because I believe the leader who learns the most wins. I believe that education is inoculation against disruption. If you look at all the most successful people in business, they have one thing in common. Vivia, mm-hmm. they read every book they can get their hands on. Mm-hmm. But the more you read, and if you do it with, let's say, a focus to looking for what's truth, what's valuable, then you're going to develop an ability to strip away what isn't really valuable. And you're going to get almost a sixth sense of what information is really valuable.
Right.
Because in your book, The Everyday Hero Manifesto, there's a line in which you say that, you know, people can spend an entire existence scaling mountains only to realize that they've scaled the wrong ones. One of the points that you mentioned, one of the examples that you give is that by, you know, one of the ways that they scale the wrong mountains is by being addicted to distractions and seduced by diversions that give us a false sense of progress. Yet in reality, steal the most valuable hours of our most precious days. So what do you mean by that? Can you elaborate on that?
Sure. It's just we live in a world now where we're glued to our screens, where we have constant, let me say, a constant torrent of notifications.
Right.
There is so much information, so many advertisements coming at us in so many different forms. There's social media, there's video games. People are calling us when we should be working. People are pinging us when we should be with our families eating.
Right.
And I think technology is beautiful. Like, how can we say technology is bad? There's so much good that it does. I'm simply saying that technology is a wonderful servant and it's a terrible master. Mm-hmm. I'm also saying that one of our most precious commodities is our creativity. It's our leadership. It's our personal potential. I mean, one of the things I talk about, I just finished the manuscript for the Wealth Money Camp by. Mm-hmm. And one of the things I talk about is when we are going through our days, knowing we're living our potential or making more of it real, it's a great source of happiness.
Hmm.
But if we're spending our best hours scrolling through social media, watching videos, let me say over chatting, like just chatting about things when we really don't have to, then that is time stolen from doing beautiful work, realizing our primal genius, and pushing value in the marketplace that would grow our businesses, our careers, but also make help communities. And, you know, if you look at people when they get to the end of their lives, one of their biggest regrets is that they spent too much time in trivial pursuits.
Right.
And yet, sadly, a lot of people are absolutely addicted to their phones, addicted to constantly being available, addicted to technology. And I'm encouraging people to be minimalists. Focus your life on just a few things.
Has technology played a role in reshaping how we approach creativity or how we approach productivity? Like, for example, we've seen artificial intelligence, you know, generative AI like ChatGPT, you know, which has come up over the past few years. And, you know, we see all these productivity apps, for instance, that sort of help people get by their day. So has technology itself reshaped the way in which we can approach productivity or the way in which we can approach efficiency, for that matter, or happiness
I would say yes and no. I would say it's all how you use it. So you mentioned productivity apps. And Divya, I'm sure many people, and I wrote a book called The 5 AM Club. I have a 5 AM Club app, and many people have found it to be very, very helpful. So, of course, technology can increase productivity if used intelligently. Personally, I am a minimalist. I don't want to have an app that measures my productivity because I feel I'll be too close to the phone. One of the concepts I teach in my methodology is the 5 great hours rule. It works really well for entrepreneurs. In other words, just work 5 hours every day in your work life, but do it in a deeply focused way. From 8 o'clock to 1 o'clock, lock yourself away and do real work versus fake work. I find a lot of value being away from technology when I'm writing a book, working on a manuscript, creating content, because that allows my brain to go into flow state. So it depends on the person. Some people love technology as a productivity tool. Personally, I just like silence, quietude, but I'm a writer, you know, I'm an artist. So there's something very pure about being away from technology for a number of hours every day.
Right. How many hours do you use technology, and how many hours do you sort of intentionally stay away from it if you had to sort of talk on a daily basis?
Well, that's a great question. I would probably say I'm on technology maybe 4 or 5 hours a day. That would include email. Is that a lot or is that low?
I suppose. I think 4 to 5 hours is very low.
Because look, I have a great team that helps me with, let's say, incoming requests. So I use technology for, I'll read the news in moderation. I will check my email. I have my family members on WhatsApp, et cetera. And, you know, I mean, YouTube, for example, has some excellent videos. Like there's a lot of good information on YouTube and that kind of thing. But I just want to make a key point, which is technology is a wonderful servant, a terrible master, like I said. Yet you mentioned, how about technology and happiness? There is huge value when you go for a walk to leave your phone at home. There's huge value when you do a workout, do it without checking your email or being available for income. So spending time away from technology every day is mission critical. And in the new book, The Wealth Money Can't Buy, I share a tactic called the zero device day. At least once a week for 24 hours, be free of all technology. Right. And that's really a digital Sabbath. And we need that to refill the well of our focus, our energy, our creativity, because our best ideas don't come when we're checking email. Our best ideas come when we're out on a walk in a park, for example, away from being available to people. And leaders are paid to be creative. Leaders are paid to think. Leaders are paid to be strategic, not to be in the fire every second.
And as a leadership coach, what kind of clients or people do you generally take on? Like, what qualities do you look for in potential leaders?
Well, I'm not doing as much one-on-one coaching as I used to. I still work with a number of billionaires. So when I do accept a mentoring assignment with a business leader, it would be a very senior executive. Often I've mentored the leadership teams of Fortune 100 companies. I've also advised sports stars and entertainment stars and music celebrities. So those would be the kind of people that I often work with. And then I also work with fast entrepreneurial companies where I go in and I might deliver a 60-minute keynote. But really, what I'm fascinated by these days is getting back to being an author. I'm really enjoying writing books again. I took a number of years off writing books. I love creating content for social media. I find it a great way to distribute value for people. And I love trying to understand, you know, what videos are really going to go viral and serve people. And I'm still enjoying, after all these years, Divya, traveling and giving keynotes to different organizations. I was just in Delhi. A few weeks ago. I was in Delhi 3 weeks ago and to give a private workshop. And I was so happy being back in India and eating the great food and feeling the culture.
And do you plan to be back here anytime soon?
Well, from everything I can see and from everything people told me when I was there, India is booming. And I sense, like a lot of people, and you know this, but I sense the next 10 years to 20 years in India is going to be a very glorious time for business people. And so I'm sure I'll be visiting India very often over the next 10 years. My son actually is an author. He's written a book called The Curveball, and he's in Goa right now. He just gave a presentation for human resource leaders in Goa yesterday.
Oh, that's amazing. I'm going to check that out. So when you take someone on for mentorship, do you look for certain specific qualities in people? Can you sense that, okay, this is a potential leader in their particular field? Are there any certain qualities?
Yes, another good question. So I just accepted an assignment for next month, and it's a very famous music star. And I just thought it would be interesting to help her. And the things that she's looking for seemed very interesting. And I thought, I could help her and it would be really interesting for me. So often it's, can I help the client? Are they having a big influence? And would it be interesting for me as well?
Mm. Right.
But that speaks to another point, which is in the new book, there's a chapter called Find a Dead Board of Advisors.
Mm-hmm.
And I talk about early in the chapter, I talk about the importance of having advisors and building a board of mentors. And we all can find mentors. Mm. But if you can't, for example, if someone says, well, a mentor is going to be too expensive, then I find a dead one. Mm. And what I mean by that is, I mean, when you think about it, we can get inside the minds of history's greatest leaders through their books.
Mm.
And so I think it's really important, no matter where you are in your career and what level you're at as a leader, to find mentors. Could be a grandfather or a grandmother, could be a neighbor, it could be a senior executive at your company, but just building relationships and getting mentoring, even reading every day. I call it the 60-minute student.
Mm.
It's so simple. It's so powerful. Put away the phone. You know, I believe in a great morning routine, the 5 a.m. Mm. club. Even if it's 6 o'clock, get up and start your day with some learning, with some journaling, with some thinking, and maybe reading a biography from a dead mentor, because those influences profoundly shape the way that we see the world and the way that we can show up in the world.
Right. And who are some of the business leaders, billionaires, and financial heavyweights that you've advised or worked with?
Well, I don't get into who I've advised for confidentiality reasons.
Right.
So,
All right. Moving on to leadership, since we're talking about leadership and mentors, at what points do most leaders fail?
At what point do most leaders fail?
Yeah.
Super question, Divya. The point that there's now, I could come up with five different answers. one of the biggest ones is they fail when they fail. Most business leaders fail when they are at the top of the mountain.
Okay.
Because when a business leader or even a human being is at the top, it's very easy to rest on your laurels. It's very easy to lose the white belt mentality. It's very easy to think your customers or your success will last forever. It's very easy to stop getting up at 5 a.m. and doing that inner work to make you a better human being. It's very easy not to go the extra mile at work when you're successful because you think no one will notice and you think you'll be successful. So what I would say, and I call this the direct proportionality of humility. If we were together, I'd draw it on a napkin for you.
Right.
But imagine, if you could imagine a model, and on the vertical axis is success.
Okay.
And on the horizontal axis is humility. And what I would say is, as success increases, increase your humility. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. Yeah.
But that's very rare. Most athletes, most business people, as success increases, humility reduces. But if you can become more humble as your success grows, and when I say humble, I don't just mean polite. I mean, as your success grows, listen more deeply, stay more open to new ideas. Humility means work hard. All those things we know we should do. As success increases, if you can be more open, humble, curious, hardworking, sincere, you're going to win.
Right. You know, and I want to, come towards the end of this conversation with talking about something on similar lines. In your book, The Everyday Hero Manifesto, there's a very interesting chapter called The 13 Hidden Traits of the Billionaires I've Advised. You know, and you've talked about different traits, like, for example, be it their attitude towards critics, like how they handle criticism, their sense of agency over accomplishment, for instance, or their commitment to consistency and persistence, childlike levels of curiosity, for instance. So can you talk some more about some of these common traits that billionaires that you've advised over the years have had? And what is the most, what's the most uncommon trait, or what's the most difficult trait for them to master?
Okay, so I'd say a few. One of the biggest traits of the billionaires I've mentored, let's call it hyper energy.
Hmm.
Divya, they just have incredible levels of energy. Other people get tired and they just keep on going. And that comes from, I think, some natural wiring, but it also comes from having a cause. You know, if you look at Elon Musk, for example, you look at Steve Jobs, for example, these people have huge missions. And when you know your mission, then it gives you incredible levels of energy. So high energy is one. And obviously you can build that with a great morning routine, morning exercise, fasting, eating well, a good information diet. Number two, the billionaires I've mentioned are calculated risk takers. So they're not crazy risk takers. They don't bet the farm. But they see opportunities most people don't, and then they are willing to pull the trigger and take some risks. If you're not willing, as we know, if you don't take any risks, there is no reward. Number three, these people are fanatical optimists. They just see a better reality. They are just, and when they get knocked down, they don't spend 20 years complaining about it. They get back up and they get on the horse. Next, too many people, and I'm not judging, I'm just reporting, too many people in society, they think a problem, they don't see problems as opportunities. Most people see a problem and then they think it's real. They go, well, I can't start the business because of this. I can't grow my business in a difficult economy because of this. I've lost my best customer, so we're going to lose sales because of this. The billionaires I've mentored understand that they are paid to provide solutions to difficult problems. Next, they are extremely disciplined. Almost every one of the billionaires I've mentored has developed. Now, I use that word, they develop discipline, whether it's by getting up at 5 a.m., by doing difficult things, by reading when they feel like watching TV. And then the last two things, they, like Steve Jobs, they've developed a reality distortion field. So they have a great vision and everyone thinks they're crazy. But if you were to sit down, Divya, with that billionaire, you would leave going, oh, you know what? I think that's possible. And that's what Bud Tribble at Apple called Steve Jobs' reality distortion field. When you heard about it, it sounded crazy. When you listened to them, you went, oh, yeah, that's going to happen. And then finally, the billionaires, they do not really care about the good opinions of others. And too many of us hear someone say, oh, you can't get fit, or you can't become successful, or you can't find love, or you can't be great. And we believe them. So the billionaires, they just go, well, that's your opinion. Good for you. But I'm going to get the job done. And they go do it.
What's the quality that's most elusive to them? Is it humility, which you mentioned earlier? Can they not differentiate between humility and hubris? Or is it something else?
That's really fascinating. I think you're right. I think a lot of them get caught up in hubris. I think that's absolutely true. It's kind of hard not to.
Right.
That's right. That's the threat. That's why success is so dangerous. That's why you have to be a contented paranoid. You have to be paranoid that, oh, okay, I'm becoming successful. Let me not fall in love with my own belief system.
Right.
So you're right. Hubris takes down so many great people and so many great companies. So yeah, I think that's one of the biggest concerns. Another thing is a lot of people who are very successful financially or in business have family problems because they were so invested. You know this is true. They're just so invested in the business and the company that they forget that there's a little window of opportunity with family, and once it closes, you don't get it open again. And a lot of them end up with health problems because they're driving so hard that they don't stop to take care of their good health. But we know that if you make the time for good health, it's actually going to make you so much more, so much clearer as a thinker. You'll make better decisions. You'll have more energy. You'll have a much longer career, and you'll be much happier. And happy leaders are actually better leaders.
We've reached the end of this conversation, Mr. Sharma. I had a very good time speaking with you. Thank you so much for taking time out for this interaction.
Thank you, Divya.
So that was our conversation with Robin Sharma for the very first episode of From the Bookshelves this year. I hope you enjoyed it. I'm Divya Shekhar. See you next time.